All right, so buckle up, everybody, because we are diving headfirst into ancient Israel.
Oh, yeah. We're talking King Jehu.
King Jehu, as told in 2 Kings 9 and 10.
Yeah.
And you've given us some really interesting material about this, like, major power struggle.
Yeah, absolutely.
You know, where the worship of Baal, like, seriously threatened to just wipe out the traditional faith in Yahweh. So, to set the scene, maybe you could give us a little context. Like, was this just some random coup?
Well, not exactly. To understand Jehu, you really have to grasp that his actions were deeply connected to a divine plan. Like, this plan had been set in motion years earlier by the prophet Elijah, you know?
Right. And then we have Elisha stepping into Elijah's rather large sandals, I guess you could say.
Yeah.
He's the one who anoints Jehu as the new king. But when I was reading through this material, I was really struck by just how, I don't know, significant that anointing was.
Yeah.
It wasn't just like some ceremonial thing. It was like a prophecy with a huge neon sign flashing destiny above it.
Mm. Yeah, I think that's a great way to put it. It's almost like if you think of it like a modern day political endorsement where someone with like massive clout throws their support behind a candidate and totally shakes up the existing power structure.
Exactly. So we've got like this religious tension just simmering, a prophecy hanging in the air, and then enter Jehu, this military commander, with basically a divine mandate to, you know, shake things up.
Yeah.
And man, he does not waste any time. He sets out to get rid of the current King Joram, the son of Ahab, and the, well, kind of infamous Jezebel, who were both really known for their, like, wholehearted embrace of Baal worship.
And when you say he doesn't waste any time, you really mean it. Like, the text even describes Jehu driving like a maniac to confront Joram.
Yeah, it's like something out of, like, an action movie, you know?
Yeah.
But there's this really interesting part, right? Jehu doesn't just, like, barge in all guns blazing. He's got a plan. He brings up Naboth's vineyard when he confronts Joram.
Oh, yeah. That's a really important detail because it directly ties Jehu's actions back to Elijah's prophecy. You know, for anyone who maybe needs a little reminder, Naboth was, unjustly killed by Ahab and Jezebel so they could take his vineyard. And then Elijah prophesied that Ahab's dynasty would fall because of what they did. So when Jehu references Naboth's vineyard, he's showing that he's not just grabbing power for himself. He's actually fulfilling like a divinely ordained mission.
Right. So he's strategically like weaving his actions into this much bigger story.
Exactly.
Proving he's the chosen instrument of, well, divine justice. It's a really interesting mix of ambition and prophecy, wouldn't you say?
Yeah, absolutely. But that ambition, even when it's fueled by, you know, by divine purpose, can have a darker side. We see that with Jehu's next move, the death of King Ahaziah of Judah.
Right. This is where things take kind of a turn. Ahaziah wasn't on the original hit list, so to speak, the people Jehu was supposed to take out.
Yeah.
But Jehu decides to, you know, kill him anyway.
Yeah.
And this is where I start to wonder, can someone be too zealous, even when they believe they're acting on, you know, on God's behalf?
Well, that's the big question, isn't it? It really makes us grapple with that fine line between fulfilling a mission and just, you know, letting it consume you.
And it's a question that becomes even more relevant when we get to Jehu's encounter with Jezebel, the queen, who has a, well, truly dramatic ending.
Yeah, even facing, you know, her imminent downfall, Jezebel doesn't back down. She dresses herself in her finest clothes, puts on makeup, and basically stares down Jehu from her window. It's total defiance.
It really does, like, paint this picture of a woman who, even in her final moments, is determined to go out on her own terms. There's almost like a tragic grandeur to it, you know?
Yeah.
Almost Shakespearean.
Definitely. And it shows how power can shift so suddenly. Jezebel, who once seemed untouchable, is now abandoned, even betrayed by her own servants who throw her from that window.
It's almost like her reign of terror finally caught up with her, you know? And with Jezebel gone, Jehu really solidifies his hold on power. But his story and the questions it brings up about power, faith, and that blurry line between justice and vengeance, it's not over yet.
You got it. And we're going to explore all of that in more depth as we keep going in our deep dive into Jehu's reign.
So Jehu's rise to power, I mean, wow, talk about dramatic. But his story doesn't end with, you know, Joram and Jezebel out of the picture. It seems like their deaths are really just like the beginning.
You're absolutely right. He doesn't just stop at like solidifying his own power. Yeah. Chehu launches this whole systematic purge, wiping out the entire house of Ahab and basically every trace of Baal worship he can find in Israel.
Yeah, he's definitely not messing around. You could say he goes for the like scorched earth approach to fulfilling this, you know, this divine mission he's got.
Yeah. Yeah, it's really a fascinating, though pretty brutal, chapter in ancient Israeli history. Like, Jehu puts together this big gathering, right, for all the Baal worshippers. He promises them this huge feast in honor of their god. And then when they're all assembled, well, he has every single one of them slaughtered.
Man, it's a chilling reminder that, like, religious fervor, even when someone believes it's God's will, can have this really dark side. It shows how, you know, extremism can pop up in any belief system, don't you think?
Absolutely, and it's a thread that runs through, you know, all of human history. Time and again, we see that righteous anger, it can morph into violence and oppression.
Yeah, for sure. It's definitely a cautionary tale, one that goes beyond any specific time or culture. And it makes you wonder, like, what if Jehu had taken a less extreme approach? Could he have done what he set out to do without all that bloodshed?
Well, that's something historians and theologians still debate. Would a more, I don't know, more measured approach, less violent, have gotten different results? Could he have gotten rid of Baal worship without, you know, resorting to such drastic measures?
It's hard to say for sure, but it definitely highlights the complexities of leadership, especially when, you know, religious beliefs are mixed in.
Definitely. And it brings us to the question of, well, how is Jehu himself portrayed in the Bible? I mean, is he a hero, a villain, or, you know, somewhere in between?
Yeah, I was thinking about that too. Like, on the one hand, he did fulfill the prophecy against Ahab's house and, you know, purged Israel of Baal worship, and those were seen as righteous acts.
Exactly. But the text, it doesn't shy away from showing just how brutal and ruthless his methods were. So while it praises his initial actions, it also criticizes him, you know, for shedding innocent blood and basically keeping that cycle of violence going.
So it's almost like the writers of Kings are giving this like multifaceted picture of Jehu, letting the reader decide what to make of the morality of his reign.
Yeah, it's a testament to how rich and complex these ancient texts are. They don't offer, you know, simple answers or easy judgments. Instead, they make us think critically, to weigh the good and bad, and to recognize that even those who believe they're acting for God can do both great things and terrible things.
So even though it was thousands of years ago, Jehu's story is still relevant. It makes us think about our own beliefs, our actions, and the possible consequences, both the ones we intend and the ones we don't, of our choices.
That's exactly it. That's the power these stories have. They're like mirrors reflecting back these enduring complexities of human nature and the age-old struggles with power, faith, and the search for meaning.
And speaking of that search for meaning, what about the bigger picture? How did what Jehu did shape the future of the kingdom? Did his reign, you know, bring peace and stability like he hoped?
Well, no, unfortunately not. While Jehu did get rid of the immediate threat from Ahab's dynasty and stopped Baal worship, his reign really marked a turning point, but toward instability and decline for the kingdom of Israel.
Really? Wow, that's kind of surprising. You'd think that getting rid of a major source of conflict, you know, both religious and political, would have, well, had the opposite effect.
Yeah, you'd think so, wouldn't you? But history rarely works out that neatly. See, Jehu's actions, while they came from, you know, sincere zeal for Yahweh, they created this ripple effect of, well, unintended consequences.
So what happened? Did the brutality of his methods come back to bite him?
That's a big part of it, yeah. All those violent purges, they created a lot of enemies, both within Israel and in the surrounding kingdoms. He planted the seeds of resentment and instability, and that eventually led to more conflict, which weakened the kingdom from the inside.
So, like, a classic case of short-term gains leading to long-term losses. What about the religious side of things? Did wiping out Baal worship have a lasting impact?
It did, for a time at least. Baal worship was pretty much suppressed during Jehu's reign and for a few generations after that. But if you look at Kings and Chronicles, you see that the pull toward foreign gods, it kept being a problem for Israel.
So even with all he did, Jehu couldn't totally fix the issues that led to Baal worship becoming so popular in the first place.
Exactly. Like trying to treat the symptoms without dealing with the root cause. Jehu's actions got rid of the outward signs of Baal worship, but they couldn't get rid of those deeper spiritual and social issues that made it so appealing to a lot of Israelites to begin with.
It shows how limited even the most dramatic and seemingly decisive actions can be. So even with all the upheaval and bloodshed, Jehu's reign didn't really bring the lasting religious reform he was aiming for.
That's right. Over time, those old patterns, they started to come back. New forms of idolatry popped up, and the kings who came after Jehu, well, they often strayed from the path of Yahweh.
Wow, so even a divinely backed regime change couldn't completely change the course of the kingdom. It makes you wonder how Jehu himself would have felt, looking back and seeing how things turned out.
It is a question worth thinking about. Would he have seen his reign as a success since he did achieve those initial goals? Or would he have felt let down by the backsliding and instability that followed?
And what about the prophets, Elisha and Elijah? They kind of fade into the background once Jehu's in charge, almost like they're deliberately distancing themselves from all the bloody stuff that happens.
That's a sharp observation, and it's definitely one of the more interesting parts of this story. Elisha is key in anointing Jehu and, you know, setting things in motion, but then he steps back once Jehu starts his reign of terror.
It's like he's saying, okay, you have the divine mandate, now use it wisely.
And as we've seen, Jehu's idea of wisdom was, let's just say, complex. And then there's Elijah. He was already gone, taken up to heaven in that whirlwind, so Elisha was carrying that prophetic torch on his own.
It's interesting to think how things might have been different if they'd stayed involved. Could they have, toned down Jehu's zeal or guided him toward a more, I don't know, measured approach?
We can't know for sure, but it definitely adds another layer to this already fascinating story. In the end, Jehu's reign, even with its initial successes, is like a warning at the dangers of power, how unintended consequences can pop up, and that never-ending human struggle to balance faith and action.
Yeah, it's a lot to think about, but that's what makes this deep dive so interesting, right? Uncovering these hidden layers, those twists and turns in a story we might think we already know. And we're back for our final look at King Jehu's reign. So we've covered, his wild rise to power, the ruthless way he purged Ahab's family and the Baal worshippers, and how morally complicated his actions were. Plus, we've seen how, even though those actions fulfilled a prophecy, they actually ended up making the kingdom more unstable in the long run.
Yeah, that's the real paradox with Jehu, isn't it? He's driven by this burning desire to, you know, cleanse Israel of what he sees as idolatry and injustice. But the methods he uses, they end up creating a whole bunch of new problems. It makes you think,
yeah,
how much does the how really matter when you're talking about fulfilling a mission that you believe is from God?
That's a question that's still with us today, right? We see it in politics, social movements, even in our own lives. When does the end justify the means? Can you even really separate those two things?
Absolutely. It goes way beyond Jehu's story. It's a fundamental human dilemma. But to get back to Jehu specifically, what about his legacy? What impact did his actions actually have on Israel in the long term?
Well, we've already talked about how his reign didn't exactly usher in an era of peace and stability like you might have thought. Seems more like it set off this whole chain reaction of unintended consequences.
You got it. Jehu's violent purges, effective as they were in the short term, they created a lot of resentment and instability. They also led to a whole string of wars and power struggles, which just weakened the kingdom even more.
So, it's the classic winning the battle but losing the war situation.
Yeah.
Like trying to put out a fire with gasoline, you might knock down the flames for a second, but you're making the whole thing worse in the long run.
Yeah, great analogy. And while we're talking about unintended consequences, let's go back to the religion. We know Jehu went all out to wipe out Baal worship, but did it actually work? Did that have a lasting impact?
That's what I was wondering, too. Throughout this whole deep dive, the pull toward foreign gods seems to be a recurring theme in Israel's history. So even with those drastic measures, did Jehu actually fix the problem of idolatry?
Well, looks like he just treated the symptom, not the root cause, unfortunately. Baal worship was suppressed for a while, but eventually those old patterns crept back in. New forms of idolatry appeared, and the kings who came after Jehu, they often strayed from following Yahweh.
It's like trying to dam a river. You might change its course for a bit, but that water is going to find a way to break through eventually. Makes you think what Jehu would have thought, looking back and seeing how things turned out.
Now that's the question to think about, isn't it? Would he have thought his mission was a success since he did reach those initial goals he set? Or would he have been disappointed by the fact that the very things he fought to get rid of, they came back eventually?
What about the prophets in all this? Elisha, the one who anointed Jehu, he kind of backs off once Jehu starts his, his campaign of violence. And Elijah, of course, is long gone by this point.
Their absence is definitely interesting. You could say that Elisha, by taking a step back, is holding Jehu responsible for his own actions, like letting him experience the consequences of his choices.
It's like they're saying, hey, we gave you the tools, we gave you the guidance, but what you do with them is on you.
Exactly. And the consequences of what Jehu chose to do, They're far-reaching and complicated. He achieves his initial aims, but at a huge cost. His reign is all about bloodshed, instability, and setting the stage for future conflict.
It really drives home the point that even when someone thinks they're acting on God's orders, they still have free will, and they can make choices that have massive repercussions.
No doubt about it. And those repercussions, they often reach way beyond just the individual and their immediate goals.
Mm-hmm.
Jehu's story, it's a powerful reminder that history is this mix of what people intend and what happens as a result. And sometimes those things are all tangled up in ways that are really hard to understand.
As we wrap up this look at King Jehu, it feels like we have more questions than answers. Was he a hero, a villain, or somewhere in between? Did he truly do what God wanted, or did he go too far?
And those questions, that's what makes the story so interesting, don't you think? It forces us to look past easy labels and simple judgments and really try to grasp the nuances of history.
And it reminds us that even those who have a super strong sense of purpose, they can do both great things and terrible things.
That's true. And maybe the biggest thing we can learn from Jehu's story is that we should all try to learn from the past, to be aware of how our actions can have consequences, and to approach complicated issues with a good balance of passion, wisdom, and compassion.
Well put. And with that, we're closing our deep dive into the reign as King Jehu. We hope exploring this with you has sparked some new insights and maybe even made you ask some questions of your own. Until next time, keep diving deep.